Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me today from Washington, D.C. is Dan Kahn. Dan is the chief of the FCPA unit at the U.S. Department of Justice. He's been there for 2 years and a day, I noticed, as I was getting ready to record this today. So, Dan, thanks for joining us and happy anniversary.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's dive in on this topic. FCPA is always a hot issue. There's a steady stream of settlements through. What are some of the key lessons that compliance officers should take away from recent FCPA settlements?
Sure. So I think the more recent FCPA settlements involved a number of factors that I think compliance officers or frankly anyone could take away from it. I think one thing that you're seeing with our recent resolutions is first and foremost that they're more and more involving not just the DOJ, but also foreign authorities. So if you see, for example, our Keppel resolution, which was this past December, Telia, which was this past September, and then a number of others, whether it's Vimpelcom, Rolls-Royce, Odebrecht, Braskem, and Breyer, more and more we are coordinating our resolutions with foreign authorities. And so I think one aspect that companies should recognize, and I think that they probably are, is that this is not just the department out there anymore leading the charge, that there are many, many countries that are out there in this fight against corruption, and many of these countries are recognizing the importance of compliance. And so in a number of these resolutions, for example, there wasn't just an independent compliance monitor with the department. There was also an independent compliance monitor with some of the foreign authorities as well. So it's no longer the case, and it probably hasn't been for a little bit of time now, that a company should simply be looking to the department and trying to figure out what the department is looking for in a compliance program and what the department will credit, but rather what all of these various jurisdictions are looking at. I think another important piece, as you've seen the Deputy Attorney General this past November announcing the formalization of the FCPA corporate enforcement policy, is that you are seeing that the department is placing a lot of emphasis on a company's compliance program, and that there are specific attributes that are referenced in the policy, but that we are taking that seriously. And if you look at some of our more recent resolutions, each of our resolutions has a relevant consideration section. And in that section, there are portions that address the company's compliance program, the company's remediation, the steps that the companies have taken in response to learning of the misconduct. And you'll see that there is a big focus in those relevant considerations about those issues. So it's something that we are taking very seriously. It's something that we're looking at. And I think our most recent resolutions bear that out.
And, you know, going back just one step on the multilateral investigations, I think, you know, you touched on an area that often gets overlooked. There's a lot of attention paid to the U.S. activities, not just because they've been around longer, but there tend to be so many more of them. But more and more non-U.S. entities are prosecuting things. Are you seeing, is there something people should be thinking about differently, realizing that other entities may be involved?
Absolutely. I think to the extent that a company, for example, is deciding whether or not to voluntarily disclose misconduct, I think they need to be thinking not just about the Department of Justice, but the other jurisdictions that have been impacted by the conduct and whether or not they want to disclose to those countries as well. And any time you have this issue where there's multiple jurisdictions investigating, there's both good and bad. I shouldn't say bad, but there's good and there is, I think, issues and obstacles that prop up. And so I think there's an overwhelming positive aspect of this, which is these are, by their very nature, international crimes. It is not possible for one jurisdiction to fight the transnational corruption fight on its own. The Department of Justice never could have done it on its own. There are always cases involving evidence overseas. the foreign official is going to be in one country, the intermediary or the intermediary bank accounts are almost always going to be in a third country. The company that's paying the bribes is probably going to be in a separate country. So there's usually two or three and sometimes many more countries that are involved in every violation of an anti-corruption law of this kind. And so the good aspect of this is that you are seeing engagement by all these authorities, which is making it a much more effective fight against corruption. And you're seeing a lot more being done, and you're seeing a lot more in way of results in terms of prosecuting these cases and successful prosecutions of these cases. But when you do that, you will necessarily have conflict. You will necessarily have other jurisdictions that may have procedures, policies, laws, rules that are simply different than the U.S. And so when I say conflict, I don't mean that in a negative, we are at odds with a foreign jurisdiction, but rather just the way that our systems are set up, there may be contradictions. And so we need to work through those. We have developed some very strong relationships over the years with some of these jurisdictions and are working through them, in my view, very well. But that doesn't mean that there aren't issues. And there are issues for companies. And companies will need to balance, for example, the privilege laws in one country versus the privilege laws in another country. They will have to balance the types of requests that one country is making versus another country. And while the various authorities can coordinate as best they can so as not to put the company in the middle of everything, at the end of the day, there may be some issues that the company has to figure out what is in its best interest, despite the fact that there are some conflicting requests or some conflicting issues.
And there's been a lot recently written about the whole GDPR issue and the roles of whistleblowers, so it's definitely something to consider. Now, you talked also about the corporate enforcement policy, and people can find information about sort of what resonates or not from a compliance perspective. When you meet with a company, what do you want to know about their compliance program?
It's a really good question, and I can give you a general answer because I think there is no specific answer. It's not as though we want to see a specific type of due diligence across the board for all companies. It's not as though we want to see a specific structure of a compliance program across the board at every company, because compliance by its very nature is going to be risk specific and company specific. And so what we are looking for is to see how a company is thinking about compliance, and we want to see evidence that the compliance program is working. And so what that means will be very different for every company. But for example, what we want to see of a smaller company may be very different from what we want to see from a bigger company, because a smaller company may not have as big a risk profile. They may not have as big a footprint in foreign countries. They may not have a business model that has as many outward facing vendors or employees to government officials. And so that is very different by way of example from a company that does have thousands and thousands of employees in various high-risk regions that are dealing with government officials every day. And so what we want to hear from a company is what their program looks like, but why it looks like that, what the company is doing in terms of thinking about the structure of its compliance, thinking about its risk profile, thinking about the steps that it's taking, and then taking that and mapping it onto what they think is the most appropriate compliance program. And then in terms of the evidence that it's working, what I mean by that is, for example, not just we know that our hotline is working because we got 1,000 calls last year on our hotline, and so there's the evidence that it's working. What we want to see is, okay, well, that's helpful, but what we really want to know is, of those 1,000 calls, how are you tracking them? How are you categorizing them? How are you responding to them? And so if of those 1,000 calls, for example, 10 of them relate to corruption, what steps did you take? Who does it get elevated to? What are you doing in response? And what happened as a result of that? And so that is one example of evidence. Another example of evidence would be if a company was telling us about its due diligence, we would want some examples of the types of red flags that have been picked up And then what the company did as a result of that, not just, you know, here's our policy, here's our procedure for due diligence, but in practice, what is happening, and show us that it's working. So I think that is the type of thing that we're looking for. And we generally, I'm the head of the FCPA unit, so we're obviously very focused on corruption, but compliance is holistic. And so it's not as though a compliance program is dedicated to corruption and not other things. If a compliance program is truly working, we also want to see that what the company is caring about is money going out the door without the company knowing what it's for, without the proper documentation. So that money could be going out the door for corruption, but it also could be going out the door because someone's embezzling money. It could be going out the door for various other reasons that are still improper and not what they were intended for. It might not necessarily be corruption, but that still demonstrates that a compliance program is or is not working.
Yeah, and you're right. It would be definitely a red flag that your controls aren't what you think they are. So what are some of the things that, you know, you find companies sit down in front of you, they tend to think this is a really important aspect of their compliance program, but from your perspective, it's just not motivating?
Sure. And again, it's nothing specific because it's different for every company. It may be that something that a company sits down and tells me is actually very important for that company. But if a different company came in and described the same exact thing, it would be wholly unnecessary for that company. And so I guess the best way to describe it is, and I know that this term gets a lot of use and is often cliched, but I think it's cliched for a reason, whether the company is just checking the boxes. And if a company is basically saying, you know, here are all our robust policies and procedures for due diligence, and here are all of our robust policies and procedures for M&A, here's our robust policies and procedures for internal audit and for monitoring, that is not what we're looking for. What we're looking for, as I was saying earlier, is the way that the company is thinking about compliance and taking it as targeted an approach as possible. We dealt with, for example, a company that was very, very small. I think it was, 100-person company. And they came in and they were describing having, you know, a chief compliance officer and multiple people working for the chief compliance officer and these very robust ways in order to track and check and monitor and approve transactions, but that just wasn't feasible for a company of that size. And so although that may be very appropriate for a bigger company, that wasn't going to work. And in fact, we later found out that it wasn't working for that company. And it just, as a budgetary reason, as a functionality reason, a company that small has to be a little bit more able to move quickly and navigate more easily and quickly. And so if you have the right people in place, your system might be able to be a little leaner if you're a company of that size. So again, it really just depends on the company, but I guess what would be most unhelpful is if a company is coming in with a predetermined way of describing a compliance program that is not mapped onto its risk profile and the specific circumstances of that company.
And all this sounds like to me that when somebody's walking in the door, you know, at the Department of Justice, or you're walking into their door and it's time to talk about what they're doing, the thing that gives it the most credibility isn't sort of all the structure, but a lot of ways, and I hope I'm not reading too much into this or putting words into your mouth, it's really the thought that went into creating this really is what you're looking for, is making sure that this really was a thought out, well designed, considered for the company's own unique situation program rather than the bells and the whistles.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, again, I just want to be clear also, though, it's not the type of thing, it's not like Valentine's Day where it's the thought that counts. The thought certainly does count, but we also want to see evidence that it's working. And so it may be that the company comes in and says, here is why we thought this all made sense. And we could sit there and say, you know what, that does make sense. Now show us the evidence that it's working. And the company said, well, actually, it's not working. And, you know, we had really good faith intentions, and here's why we thought it made sense, but it ended up not working. The company will certainly get credit for honesty, and they'll get credit for having their minds and their hearts in the right place. But in terms of whether or not the compliance program is working, we need to see that in fact it is. And so it is certainly the thought that counts, but that has to actually have results and successful results. And so bells and whistles may be very important for a big company that has a certain risk profile. Bells and whistles may not be important and may frankly detract from the ability of the compliance program to work most effectively in a different type of company. So it's really about the specific company, how they're going about their compliance and making sure that in fact it's working. Because again, part of an effective compliance program is not just designing it and putting it in place. It's checking up on it. It's monitoring it. It's seeing if it's working. And if a compliance program is not doing a self-assessment every once in a while to make sure that everything's working, then that in and of itself is not an effective compliance program.
So as I listen to you, I can't help but thinking of something. There's some out there who are pushing various certifications of compliance program and creating standards for certification. A lot of what you're saying to me makes me think that just because a program has met some standard for certification doesn't necessarily mean the DOJ is going to look at that as providing some sort of proof. That you're much more interested in, was the program designed for the actual business rather than did this meet some standard someone created?
Right. And so I think, you know, you're right. There are a lot of these certifications out there. And I want to be careful with how I answer this because I do think there is some value. And I don't want to suggest that simply that we will ignore a certification. If a company is in good faith going out and trying to test itself and trying to see if it measures up to various standards and wants to make sure that it is certified, that is something that we will look at and we will treat positively. If a company cares about its compliance program to that degree that they're doing that is a factor that we will consider. But simply because a company has been certified, that will not be a proxy for us doing our own evaluation of the company's compliance program. So simply because a company has been certified doesn't mean we say, oh, great, someone else has determined that this is an effective compliance program and therefore our job is done. Rather, we will look at the company's compliance program. We will do all the things that I've been talking about in terms of understanding why the various policies are what they are, understanding why the various controls are what they are, and pressing the company for evidence to show us that they're working. We're going to do that regardless, but it is certainly something that we would consider and look at and factor into our consideration.
Well, thanks for explaining that. Thank you for your time today and your candor. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SECE and HCCA saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.